I can't believe it took 40 years of adult life before the government finally told me you don't have to hang around with your family for a day.
Like Bob Marley said yesterday, finally, COVID probably finally paying dividends.
Yeah.
On the phone list right now, it's always a pleasure to talk to the governor of Massachusetts, Governor Charlie Baker. Good morning, sir. How you doing?
You know, I have to tell you guys, you just made me smile for the first time in about a month. That was the most interesting interpretation of our Thanksgiving guidance I have ever heard. And there are people all over Massachusetts who know exactly what you mean, but would never say it out loud.
Well, there are many people who spend 364 days trying to avoid these people you're supposed to sit down with for that one day in November.
Man, that's good.
Everyone's all angry at Charlie Baker, but when you come right down to it, damn it, he's making some sense.
He did us a favor.
So I want to ask you about that. This is obviously, you know, the toughest time of your political, maybe even personal, professional career, trying to manage through this. And, you know, it would seem to me that it's almost impossible to manage through a good deal of the issues that COVID has brought on, never mind, you know, the people who are the most need. How do you address those people that, for whatever reason, are being critical of some of the choices you've made?
I guess what I would say is that we try to make what we consider to be the best choice, and in many cases, the least worst choice that's available to us based on the information that we have. And with COVID, and I've said this before, people are still learning about it. And because people are still learning about it, you know, when the facts change, some of the guidance and some of the directions that we put out have to change along with it. And I will say this, I do think the people in Massachusetts have shown an unbelievable amount of resilience through this whole thing. I mean, if you go back to where we were in May, I mean, we had an 18% unemployment rate, okay? We now have a 7.4% unemployment rate. And while 7.4 is still, you know, 5 points higher than it was when this all started back in February, which seems like 100 years ago now, we do thousands of inspections of businesses all the time, operating under rules and guidance that are, you know, at times complicated to implement and difficult to sustain. And, you know, the vast majority, like 99% of the businesses that get surveyed are doing the right things and trying to keep their employees and their customers safe. So this has clearly been one of the most difficult things I've ever done. But at the same time, I have a lot of gratitude for the way the people in this state have handled what in many cases has been, you know, both tragedy and just incredible sacrifice and disruption along the way. I mean, thank you for continuing to do your Thanksgiving food drive. The food pantry system, the food system generally, as I'm sure you guys have talked about, has been significantly challenged by all this. And it's another great example of where, you know, between the state and the stuff we could get from the federal government and our colleagues in local government and the private sector and all the agriculture players, the small farms in Massachusetts, people have done incredible work to try to make sure people continue to have food on their tables.
And thank God for the assistance and the leadership of the federal government, he said sarcastically. But the other thing I wanted to ask you about, you mentioned the businesses.
Yeah, don't get me started on that one.
On the federal leadership, yeah. But on the 9:30 curfew, I know there are a lot of businesses, restaurants, obviously, that were hurting before this even happened and are claiming, and I'm sure with good reason, that it's worse under this circumstance. I understand the idea that the later into the night it gets, the lower people's inhibitions become because they've been drinking more. But does that not then either create people drinking more earlier, or does it actually not solve a problem but make it easier?
I guess the answer to that is it depends. What I can tell you is that, and first of all, by the way, we did amend the regulation around the stay-at-home advisory. If you were sitting down and you were eating a meal and you'd been served at a restaurant, you know, you didn't have to, you know, you didn't have to leave at 9:30. You know, there, you could finish your meal, and that was an adjustment. And we did that for restaurants, right? Because of the nature of the kind of business they're in and how their model works, and many of them said that they appreciated that adjustment because it would make it possible for somebody to show up at 8:30 or so. And not feel rushed to finish. Your analysis of how we were thinking about it is consistent with how we were thinking about it. The one thing I would add is we also put the private gathering rule out at 10 at that point and took it down from 25. And the combination of those two things basically were designed to send a message that you really ought to be home and not out, either at a recreation, entertainment, or other kind of venue after 10 o'clock, and people ought not to be having big gatherings into the evening. In fact, people ought not to be having big gatherings at all, because it was pretty clear from the data we've gotten that a lot of this private, casual, informal, no mask, sharing food, hanging around with people who are your friends and your neighbors in many cases, not the people you would ever expect would have COVID, is a big part of what was causing the spread.
This is Governor Charlie Baker on the phone. I'm hearing you explain this, but at the same time, I'm also thinking about schools. And, you know, up until just recently, there was a big push to bring a bunch of communities back to, in-person schooling, and I don't know if you could really justify, you know, one and still be pushing for another thing. It just seems to be, you know, a little bit of in conflict with each other. And I know that schools are under an enormous amount of stress trying to figure out how to do this correctly. But with a surge, it just seems that any school that's still doing a hybrid model is putting themselves at great risk.
So I completely disagree with you, which I know is important on your program because it's all about arguing. All the research, all of it, and there's plenty of it now, shows that if people are actually doing the things they're supposed to do in school, if they're wearing masks, if they're washing their hands, if they're cohorting the kids, which is not hard to do, and doing the things that have been recommended, not just by us, but by people sort of all over the world. School is not a spreader. Let's take the parochial school. They have 30,000 kids, 4,000 staff. They've been in person since August, and many of them are located in very high-risk communities and serve primarily kids and families from those communities. And they've had a handful of cases, a handful. I mean, the simple truth of the matter is structure, when it comes to dealing with COVID, is really important. And they've done studies in Europe where literally they've had hundreds of thousands of kids and faculty and staff who've been studied on a longitudinal basis over many months and have not found that the problem exists in places where people are doing the things they're supposed to do. I mean, I can almost make an argument that that keeping kids out of school, having them, you know, hanging around with each other, doing the casual, informal stuff I was just talking about, is in some respects at least as potentially dangerous as anything else they do. And I think the damage we're doing to kids by not having them in school, not having them, especially the K-8 kids, who, by the way, are the ones who everybody says are the least likely to get it, the least likely to transmit it, and the least at risk when it comes to COVID in the first place. I mean, it is really hard to teach a first grader or a second grader or a third grader how to read remotely. It just is.
No doubt.
And I think there's a reason why the American Academy of Pediatrics has made very clear, both here in Massachusetts and around the country, the kids belong in in-person school. People are extremely concerned about the negative consequences of no rhythm, no in-person learning, and all the rest of it, no sustained momentum. We had special needs schools operating all the way through the pandemic, going all the way back to the spring, all the way through the summer. And that's very close contact stuff. Okay. And with very limited amounts of COVID that came up as a result of all that. I mean, if people do what they're supposed to do, if they follow the guidance, there's just not evidence that schools are a big problem. It just isn't. I mean, we currently have, I think we have 400 reported cases so far. And remember, most of the reported cases are people calling in for people who are in hybrid or in person, right, across the system. I think it's around 400 cases for staff and kids. We have almost 500,000 staff and kids who are either in person or hybrid. And there's like one, I think there's maybe one example so far of where they think the spread happened in school, and it was among staff, and it was in a school district where people were actually remote.
You understood and participated in the arguing part of it perfectly, but keep in mind it also is about animosity. So if you can hold that animosity now towards Bax, that
yeah,
would be great.
That would be great.
I'm glad you pointed that out. Are there any other A's that go with this besides arguing and animosity?
Yes, there is another A, but unfortunately,
and anger. Yeah.
There's actually a couple of other A's too, but we'd lose our license
yeah,
if I mentioned
exactly. Yeah. And we know you have to run, but we do appreciate the time today, and thanks for calling in, and let's not wait another 2 months before we have you on.
We'll not do that. And I got to tell you guys, I said to the producer beforehand, I said, how long have you guys been doing this? And he said 26, 27 years, something like that. God bless you. Honestly, it's a beautiful thing. And we are all gifted by the fact that we have folks like you who are out there doing work like this in Massachusetts all the time. And I hope you have a nice Thanksgiving.
Thank you.
You too, sir. Governor. Thanks.
Governor Charlie Baker with Bax and O'Brien of the Mayflower Marathon at Rock 102.